So, what is it about me?
I don't know. Because you're smart, you're funny.
Ross is smart and funny. Do you ever think that about him?
Yeah, right.
What is it?
Hello and welcome to Gayest Episode Ever, the podcast where we talk about the LGBT-focused episodes of classic sitcoms. I'm Drew Mackey.
I'm Glenn Lakin.
And if that intro did not tip you off, today we are talking about a show called Friends? Friends? Is that, am I pronouncing it right?
Franz,
okay.
Yeah, I think it's Franz.
And that third voice you're hearing is Emily Burnett, who is rejoining us from season one to talk about Friends. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Drew.
Emily is a copy editor and writer living in Los Angeles. Emily, if people have grammar questions, they can just tweet at you, right?
I mean, they can at their own risk.
How do you feel about semicolons?
I mean, I'm an M-dash girl myself, so. Oh. Yep.
Was that the Daily Nexus that made us love M-dashes? Was that just a house staff thing that they had there?
Yeah, I think it was. They are helpful for line breaks.
They are. They look nice and they kind of make you look like you know what you're doing, even though they really don't mean anything.
Right? Precisely.
This podcast is not about punctuation, though. It is about Friends. Emily, what is your relationship with the TV show known as Friends?
My relationship with Friends goes back to when I was in the fifth grade, and I found it on TV. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was reruns already. Mm-hmm. And then 2 summers later, I had to basically live with my brother and sister-in-law to babysit in their new house. They moved from out of state, and she had all of the DVDs. And so that is how I spent my summer. And then we played the trivia game.
And you won.
Of course. Like I said earlier, before this podcast started, I really like to win things.
Okay. Well, you're winning at this podcast already because it probably means you've seen every episode of Friends.
I have. I have to say I'm out of practice, but yes, I have seen all of them multiple times.
That is very helpful. I have not seen every episode of Friends because I stopped watching when I was in college, but I had roommates who watched, so I'd get little bits and pieces. But I actually just found out doing research for this episode that Winona Ryder was on at one point. I know
that should know that because I told you that's another gay episode of Friends.
Yeah, I was upset that that wasn't the one we were doing, if you recall.
Yeah, I've mentioned this several times.
Well, I drink a lot. We will get to that one, by the way. We're going to go through these episodes chronologically. Glenn, what is your relationship with Friends?
I watched it. Okay. I have more to say. I've probably seen almost every episode. I didn't really watch the last season as it aired because I was in college. And it wasn't Frasier, so I was like, whatever. Actually, maybe I was out of college. Whatever, I didn't watch it. And I think it actually did apply to sort of my gayness or gayety because it came out roughly when I was like 15 or 16 or I don't know. When did it come out, Drew?
1994.
So 14. Yeah. And I was probably feeling very ugly and Friends had a lot to do with it because Matt LeBlanc and...
But David Schwimmer and the other one are also on it. So that must have made you feel okay, right?
Yes.
Matthew Perry.
Matthew Perry. No, Matthew Perry and Matt LeBlanc were both like very like wavy haired, handsome.
Yeah, they could never like hair.
Swoop hair.
Season one, and then they chopped all their hair super short. Right. And I didn't like that. As like a 12-year-old who didn't realize he was gay. It's like, well, why did you care so much about the fact that they cut all their hair really short?
I mean, to be fair, I cared and I'm not into that.
Right. Well, I mean, we both might not have known what was going on at the time.
Point being, I was very much compared to a Ross, and I wanted to be Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah, Ross sucks. I'm sorry for that.
That's fine.
We're all a little Ross.
This room is full of Rosses.
Yeah.
Anyone who like makes a point to be correct rather than being liked is kind of a Ross, and it's something we all have to fight.
Drew, what was your experience with Friends?
Like I said, my whole family watched it and I liked it in junior high and then I never really went back to it. And now it's like one of those, I have the same relationship towards it that I have to all the chatty metropolitan NBC comedies where it feels kind of phony and I have no desire to watch it again. So it was a little rough sitting through this episode, which, by the way, is the one where Nana dies twice, but which we are calling Everyone Thinks Chandler is Gay. Emily and I talked about what episode of Friends we should do. And the idea that, like, we'll probably keep doing this podcast for a little bit.
Until the law stops us.
Oh, I just really want to get to that last episode. It's less that I care about the podcast and more I want to talk about Friends with Winona Ryder. I'm just kidding. I love you guys.
So we're going to go in order. There's this one. I think the next big one is the lesbian wedding one, which is a huge one.
Yes.
But this kind of leads into this because it's basically the introduction of major gay themes on the show. And then
I thought there was a character at first. Major gay themes.
Major gay themes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the one with Chandler's. They call her dad. We would say that's his mom, played by Kathleen Turner. It's a really misunderstood interpretation of how, like, trans identity works. But the one with Kathleen Turner. Yeah.
It's confusing.
And then the one with Winona Ryder. Is there another big one we should do? There's one where, like, Ross doesn't like the fact that his son is playing with dolls, right?
Yes.
Is that a gay episode or is that a Ross is a dick episode?
Yeah. I feel like it's a gay episode to us because it's, like, at least to me, because, like, that's, like, my childhood, but except my parents were very lovely about my proclivities with dolls. But, like, I think that's more of just, like, a crisis of masculinity episode.
It's a microaggression episode.
I mean, the same thing with Freddie Prinze Jr. as the male nanny, who's very sensitive and artistic.
Yes, I had forgotten about that.
That's not really a gay episode either. It's just, like, Ross can't handle other expressions of male identity, which is strange because he's sort of the least masculine of the three.
But, like, also, like, kind of the biggest asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very complex character.
We could say those two things might be related.
That's true. Friends, if you somehow don't know, is a sitcom about six adults living in New York. I don't really know how much information to give, but we usually give a quick rundown. So I'll say that it ran for 236 episodes and 10 seasons on NBC from September 22nd, 1994 to May 6, 2004. It starred, you know who it starred. Importantly, it was created by David Crane and Marta Kaufman, whose credits pre-Friends include Dream On and The Powers That Be. Do you remember that one?
No, I remember Dream On, obviously.
They wrote for Dream On. They created The Powers That Be, and it had Holland Taylor and David Hyde Pierce before he was on Frasier. And it was about a political family that, like, they were all fucked up. Also, the mean...
You know how I feel about Holland Taylor.
She's great. Also, the mean mother-in-law from Dead to Me.
Oh.
I think she might be married to David Hyde Pierce's character. It wasn't bad.
I do remember it now that you mentioned her.
Yeah. Yes,
I loved it. Not enough to remember it, but I loved it.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt was also in it. Like pre-30 Rock from the Sun.
I would watch 30 Rock from the Sun.
I mean, someone's written that fan fiction already. They would go on post-Friends to do Veronica's Closet, a CBS sitcom called The Class, which was criticized for all the same problems that people have with Friends today. And Marta Kaufman is co-creator for Grace and Frankie, which is currently on TV. Not with David Crane, though.
Think there's a story there?
I didn't want to get too far into it, but I'm sure someone that we know, like, has heard something. If you listen to our previous episode, we talk about how it's actually Living Single that kicked off the trend of fancy young people dating and having jobs in New York. But Friends is the one that got credit for it. And in the wake of Friends, we also got The Single Guy, Suddenly Susan, Boston Common, Partners, Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. The middle seasons of Ellen, after it stopped trying to be Seinfeld and before it became the lesbian show, and is in some ways is maybe a more dominant cultural force than Seinfeld was, because there's so many shows that imitated it that, like, flooded most, like, all the broadcast networks.
Did you mention Married with Children's Enemies attempted spinoff?
No. Oh, we really should talk about all the attempted spinoff. Yeah, Married with Children did an episode called Enemies about, like, shitty people that hate each other.
Who live together.
Yeah.
I guess in Chicago and not New York.
I'm suddenly feeling very unprepared for this podcast. I thought I was ready for.
Well, no, you're ready for it.
We're jumping back to Friends. This is what I felt maybe people should hear if they hadn't thought about the legacy of Friends.
I appreciate you and what you're doing.
This is what we do to guests. We make them feel small.
It's working.
So most of those shows I mentioned didn't last very long, but shows like New Girl, Happy Endings, and How I Met Your Mother also owe, like, a huge cultural debt to Friends and were influenced by Friends, but, like, turned it into something that worked better and, like, was newer and more contemporary. And that's why those lasted a lot longer. Before we go into the episode itself, there's two problematic things I want to talk about. And the first one is a conversation that's been happening a lot online recently, and that is whether Friends is homophobic or transphobic by 2019 standards. Just off the bat, do you guys have any feelings about this discussion?
I mean, I feel like everything before 2000 is homophobic by 2019 standards, homophobic and transphobic.
Mm-hmm.
I think if that's your question, then the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to get into the weeds on this question because I feel like they did what they could at the time and it had a gay creator. So I don't like getting in the weeds on that too much because that's a whole issue of unpacking that person's mentality and the times, and I wasn't alive then, so
I'm gonna talk. You were alive then.
I was alive then, but I was very young. And yeah.
Do you have any thoughts? Just
maybe in the sense that, like, just with the erasure of these identities in New York during mm-hmm. that time is sort of not egregious, just unfathomable. I don't know. It's you would think that these characters would show up. As for problematic portrayals, probably don't stick out for me, but like the gay jokes we hear, like for instance in this episode,
mm-hmm.
were the standard gay jokes you heard in the early and mid 90s, where it's like, oh, if you are a fancy or funny or clean male,
mm-hmm.
and if you have style for sure, like clearly you must be gay, or the joke is you are gay presenting and we're going to confuse you for mm-hmm. gay.
Right. So I think you guys are both right.
Yay!
I also think one of the reasons that this conversation is happening is that people who are much younger than us are just now burning through Friends on Netflix, and they have different societal standards than we did at that age. And they're like, oh, this thing that everyone says is great and was a huge deal is like really fucked up. And not just the trans stuff. Like there's really fucked up racial dynamics where there are two persons of color that appear more than once on the show. And those are Julie, Ross's girlfriend, who's played by Lauren Tom, who's Asian, and Charlie, who is... Did Charlie date both Joey and Ross? She's played by Aisha Tyler?
Yes, she dated both of them.
Okay. That's it. There are no other people of color that appear in more than one episode, which is really fucked up. So people complain about that. They complain about Fat Monica, and they think it's weird how much glee the show seems to have. Like, it presents Monica being fat as if that's just a funny thing.
Sure, we have a hand raised.
Emily?
The Fat Monica stuff also bothers me, but these are the same people who find Fat Thor really funny, and I just want to point that out. I just want to put it out there.
Hmm.
Fat Thor from the Marvel movie.
Oh, yeah. We're exactly picturing that right now.
In a sexual way. But was Fat Thor played for jokes or played as a legitimate expression of depression?
Both.
Like,
Don Cheadle made a joke about his veins being full of cheese whiz.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So... I will say there is this amazing video called Homophobic Friends, and it is a compilation of every arguably homophobic or transphobic joke ever made on the history of Friends.
I feel like you could have linked us to that, Drew.
I'm linking it in the show notes. I only found out about it like right before this, but you wouldn't have time to watch it because it is 50 minutes long.
Oh.
And there's an interview with the woman who made it, and she says, like, I actually did cut stuff out. If I hadn't cut out the stuff that was redundantly homophobic, it would have been 90 minutes long. I'm like, okay, well, 10 seasons. That's leaves room for a lot of homophobia.
So that's really only like 10 minutes per season.
Yeah, that's it.
So it's like...
Don't downplay this.
I'm actually grateful that you broke it down that way. For perspective, it's still awful. But
yeah, it's half an episode per season.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at some of the stuff that's been written about Friends recently, the best argument against it that I could find was by this woman named Samantha Riddell. And she says two paragraphs that I think sum up most of what people are saying. Number one, Friends is not a toxic show because of its overt homophobia or its transmisogyny. It is not a toxic show because of the more subtle ways it reflects the bigotry of its time. It is a toxic show because both of these things are true about a sitcom that won national acclaim as a wholesome, apolitical show while actively adding to the gleeful mockery queer people in America have to face. Number two, her end paragraph is very damning. If you can enjoy Friends in 2018, more power to you, but be honest with yourself about what you're watching. A bunch of white people sitting around and making fun of whoever acts gay in between hooking up. Nostalgia might make things seem rosier, but make no mistake, Friends is a terrible show about cruel people who tear others down because of their perceived queerness, and its legacy will be forever tainted as a result. On the other side, we have Emily Nussbaum, who is the Pulitzer Prize-winning TV critic for The New Yorker.
I like The New Worker.
The New Worker. That's like a communist magazine.
Yeah, it's like a Bernie Sanders like pamphlet. Yeah.
That they remade 9 to 5.
Yeah. who I should say is a cisgendered woman who's married to a man. And this is not an essay. This is a series of tweets that she wrote. But she has very good perspectives on TV. She knows TV really well. And her counterpoints were good. She said, calling Friends homophobic is short-sighted, silly, and simplistic. It was a show co-created by a gay man scoring laughs off a mid-90s cultural phenomenon. : straight men freaking out about seeming gay as a result of the increased visibility of out, comfortable gay men. Every 90s white boy sitcom had a plot like this. It was a cliche. It was a period full of weird, nervous jokes about masculinity, aimed at and centered around straight men. Gay men themselves were portrayed on the show as ordinary people amused by these weird freakouts. Meanwhile, showing Ross's ex and her wife getting married was viewed, legitimately, as a pro-gay breakthrough. The show's comic aim could veer off course, the stuff with Chandler's dad always felt screwy, and some of it now feels hokey and sour, but it wasn't hostile to gay people. It was obsessed with the idea that if gay men were all over the Upper West Side happily brunching, what made Chandler and Joey any different? The way bigger 90s problem was how few central gay characters existed to have their own stupid freakouts until Ellen and finally Will and Grace. And then she also dings it for erasing Jewish culture and a lot of the characters on the show being Jewish-ish, but like not really, which is something we actually talked about when you did the Seinfeld with us, and the Costanza family being non-Jewish Jewish characters, which is, again, very interesting. And then this person on Twitter, whose name is Ryder Kessler, responded. Does that name ring a bell with you? Because he's one of our patrons.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I know this. Oh, thank you. Like this person.
I mean, yeah, of course. Oh, God. Yeah. Ryder Kessler. Yeah.
So he responded to her very eloquently and said, explaining why there are a lot of gay jokes on Friends doesn't mean they weren't homophobic. I was watching Friends earlier today, and I love it, but it always burns me about how high the gay panic jokes per episode rate is. As a closeted 8 to 18-year-old watching, the laughing at gay panic nuance was lost on me, but the gay is scary content certainly wasn't. And Friends was a worse offender than other sitcoms I watched back then. Golden Girls, Murphy Brown, Seinfeld. It's a legitimate complaint. Which I think is another great perspective that, like, no matter how we might feel about it, the people who are younger than us are going to have like taken it in very differently. Like you probably took it in much differently because we were like, you saw it later than we did.
Yeah.
You being Emily, sorry.
Yeah, that's me. I think that Glenn saw me scoff when Emily Nussbaum said, silly. I don't appreciate a cis woman, a cis straight woman telling the gay community that they're silly for being offended by something that feels categorically wrong. But I see all sides. It can be both things. These aren't.
Are you saying that several things can be true at once?
I am, which I realize is a cop out, but it's nuanced and you can find joy in problematic things. I mean, and also the criticism about these friends tearing each other down, that's the basis of every modern sitcom. I wouldn't limit that to Friends. So sure, the subject matter might have been about, you know, presenting gay versus any other topic, acting too smart, acting too dumb. Mm-hmm. The Big Bang Theory was the most popular sitcom on television.
Also owed a huge debt to Friends. I didn't even think about that one because I forget it exists. But yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
It's just about friends making fun of each other, which was not a healthy dynamic to have in real life. This isn't real life.
The Dick Van Dyke Show is also half about friends at work making fun of each other. And we don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and A Star is Born was one of the biggest movies last year. And that's about a very toxic relationship. So, and they call that a romance story. I mean, it's complicated.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to say that a person of color or a trans person should not be offended by any of the content. I'm not going to speak towards that. And as a gay man, I've probably internalized a lot of the homophobia of the shows I watched in this. This is like almost completely news to me. Like I just washed it away, which is, you know, a combination of maybe both Friends and the times and myself in some ways. So I don't know. Like the thing about Friends is that it wasn't so much, and I didn't do a lot of rewatch. It's like I'd watch maybe reruns here and there. And no real storylines stick out for me that much. Like, I watched this episode, and I probably hadn't seen it since it first aired, but I was predicting what the jokes were. Like, I remember the jokes vividly. I remember the dad, Ross's dad, like, making that depression joke. And I remember the packets of Sweet and Low coming down from the ceiling. So, like, bits and pieces of the show were very successful and stuck with me. But, like, the strength came from the characters and how they stuck out and I think the actors settled into those roles very nicely in a sitcom-y way.
This was the 8th episode of the first season, I should point out. So, like, they're just getting their feet on who these characters are.
Yeah, like, and Phoebe in this episode is a very different person than the Phoebe she would become. And I think she would become a much more lovable character. And I think a lot of the conversation around Friends is that the first season was more of a let's prove ourselves to the network as this quirky thing with all these quirky storylines and quirky characters. And a lot of those things fell away. And I think when those things fell away, they maybe did settle into some cultural weirdness with the gay stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe that just became too comfortable for them once they no longer had the, oh, well, Ross has a monkey and a lesbian ex-wife. And Phoebe's really weird and like talks to her dead friend in a pencil and things like that. Once they lost the contrivances, I don't know. They may have leaned into the easy jokes more.
This is probably true. Although Phoebe still keeps that weirdness. In the lesbian wedding episode, she's possessed by like an old woman. Now I've seen everything live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Phoebe, I feel like, gets actually weirder over the course of the show, the way Joey gets dumber. So, like in this episode, Joey seems pretty level-headed.
Doesn't really say anything dumb. Phoebe seems like she's the dumb one in this episode. If anyone is. Yeah,
but Phoebe gets smarter, just more eccentric.
Right. Yeah, it's worth pointing out that this show is so new that it actually aired at 8:30 because its first season, Mad About You, was the dominant show, and Friends was in the hammock position between Mad About You and Seinfeld, which did not last long. It very quickly became the cornerstone of the entire night. But like at this point, NBC was still be like, oh, is this going to last? We don't know. The week it aired, this episode aired, was November 10th, 1994. Friends was the 14th most watched show this week, with only 21 million people tuning in. Living Single, just for comparison's sake, aired in the exact same time slot, 69th, that same week. So a big difference. Mm-hmm. This episode was written by Kaufman and Crane, and it was directed by that James Burrows guy that we keep seeing everywhere.
I think his real career ahead of him.
Yeah, he's doing good. The episode opens with what is the B plot, and the B plot is kicked off with Chandler in his office, like break room, and this coworker named Shelley comes in and tries to set him up on a date. After she addresses him as gorgeous, which is like kind of a warning sign.
You're not dating anybody, are you? Because I met somebody who would be perfect for you.
You see, perfect might be a problem. Had you said codependent or self-destructive.
Do you want a date Saturday?
Yes, please.
Okay. He is cute. He's funny. He's
a he?
Well, yeah. Oh, God. Good, Shelley. Okay, I'm just going to go flush myself down the toilet now. Okay, bye-bye.
She just presumed he was gay, and that's a no-no.
I mean, that workplace interaction would not happen today. I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think you would offer up someone. You wouldn't try to set someone up at work.
Especially, you wouldn't presume their sexuality and then try and set them up. Or maybe people would. I don't know how real offices work.
So, I mean, Emily and I worked in an office once, and it was a strange place where, as a gay man, the way straight women thought was the way they should interact with me was not right, because I'm not good at that. And I kind of took pleasure in being very disappointing to them. But it was weird, the things they would just come up and say initially before they realized, like, oh, I'm not the one that wants to hear that. Is there like a lesbian equivalent of that?
So in my new office that I work in, I have chosen to just not distinctly out myself. It'll come up in conversation.
When they listen to this podcast.
When they listen to this podcast. So I get a little less of that. But in my last office, I got a lot of what are your thoughts on ex-gay topic? Just out of nowhere from people I didn't interact with that much.
By which you mean like variable gay topic and not like ex-gay, like ex-gay.
Correct. Yeah. Like,
so conversion therapy.
Like an example now would be like Kristen Stewart in the Charlie's Angels trailer.
Mm. What do you think of Kristen Stewart in the Charlie's Angels trailer?
Kristen Stewart is the only good thing about that Charlie's Angels trailer. Okay. That's my take.
I'm okay with that. I wish Elizabeth Banks well.
Someone on Twitter, I hate when people say that and they don't know who it was, said that it looked like a Freeform original movie. And I agree with that assessment.
It'll probably make a ton of money. Do you remember at the office Christmas party when there was assigned seating and they put you, me, and the other two gay people in the office at our own table, segregated from everyone else? And also, it was the table closest to the door.
That makes me so happy.
And we're like,
that explains why we got along. Honestly, you just blew my mind. I hadn't even realized that that's what happened.
That is
100% what happened.
Is the gay table the new kids table?
It's like the table that they want the least to do with, I guess. Like, they didn't think any of us were important, I presume. It was really not okay. And I feel like they should have been, that should have been brought to someone's attention, because they may have done it accidentally, but like the optics of it were not good. Mm. But it was like Lady Boss who made that decision. And I feel like she would have felt bad if she knew about that. But who knows?
Yeah, she probably would have felt bad.
Without naming names, she's also the person who canceled Firefly. There we go.
So how do you feel about this scene with Chandler?
I feel like it's not out of the realm of possibility that a woman who's way too comfortable around gay men would just go up and try to set one up with some other guy without really knowing a fucking thing about him. She doesn't know Chandler at all, because if she did, she probably would realize that he's not gay.
Yeah. I mean, his reaction was both exaggerated and understated in a very Chandler way. Like, the movement was large, but like, I don't know, ethereal enough to like not ding him for making the, as we talked about before, like this typical straight guy, like, oh my God, you think I'm gay?
Mm-hmm. Right. If Ross had been accused of that in the workplace, he probably would have screamed.
He would have broken things.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that Chandler played that, like you said, it was a good combination of just offended enough, but kind of kind. Mm-hmm. In the delivery.
Because you can't be an asshole about it, because then everyone will think you're a homophobe. But like, also that thread continues throughout the entire show, even after Chandler gets married.
So what we've decided is that the scene is true to the time.
And possibly true to this time. I would guess.
A bridge.
So the very next scene, so there's the credits and we all know the music. And then the next scene is everyone's eating takeout Chinese with very weird large utensils.
Yeah, I had my eye on the utensils for quite a bit.
Is that a thing?
Well,
I was trying to remember. I was like, these feel vaguely familiar, but I was like, no, those were those cutesy chopsticks that they had for a while.
Like chopsticks
would have for kids.
Okay.
But that's not what they were using.
No, these were very, I think, again, in the first season, they were trying to be so quirky. And I think they were like, oh, look at these quirky chopsticks for white people who don't know how to use chopsticks. So when you want to give up, the other end of it is a spoon and a fork. And they were large and they still didn't know how to use them. Like, I don't know if they weren't comfortable eating and acting at the same time yet, because Monica just picked at those noodles.
Well, Monica has food issues, as we know.
Well, now I feel bad.
I mean, she's also a chef.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Food is complicated for her. I think they just couldn't manipulate these weird utensils well enough to eat the Chinese food. And they're all sitting around the table and Chandler's going on about this.
Is that ridiculous? Can you believe she actually thought that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I first met you, you know, I thought maybe, possibly, you might be.
You did?
Yeah, but then you spent Phoebe's entire birthday party talking to my breasts, so then I figured maybe not.
Huh, did any of the rest of you guys think that when you first met me?
I did.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Not me.
No, me neither. Although, you know, back in college, Susan Salador did.
You're kidding. Did you tell her I wasn't?
No. No, it's just because I kind of wanted to go out with her, too. So I told her, actually, you were seeing Bernie Spellman. who also liked her. So.
And he's like, well, Ross is smart and funny. Like, does that mean he seems gay? And everyone just laughs instantly. So, like, no one would mistake Ross for being gay because he's
awful.
Yeah, he like sucks too much to be a gay person. I don't.
I guess because like, well, he also has a very problematic crush on Rachel. Since he never shuts up about his crush on Rachel, is why you wouldn't think he's gay. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what they were laughing at. They were trying to say, well, no, he doesn't have the same non-cis straight male qualities that mm-hmm. Chandler apparently exudes.
A quality is what Monica says.
I guess, are we to believe that he is less smart and funny? Because I was looking at the way he was dressed, and it felt like he was on par with everyone in the room. I couldn't figure out why it would be so obvious that he's not.
Because he's so tall? Sometimes tallness does throw people off. They don't think gay men can be really tall.
That's not true. As a tall child and a thin, tall person in high school, I feel like my tallness was like a beacon. Only because I swayed so gently in the wind.
That's probably the swaying, Glenn.
Sounds more like a buoy.
Well, it is weird thinking about like what any of us would use to look at a person and determine if that person is gay or not. Because sometimes it is very easy to do, but other times it is something that you would have a hard time verbalizing. I don't know. Like, does that make sense to you guys?
Are we going to talk a little bit about their use of radar later? Like, it's just about a radar?
Apparently, Gadar was not in popular use at that time. Because it seems like they should have used that again.
I was looking it up. We can talk about it later. But,
like, there are studies where people are looking at pictures of humans and are asked to very quickly identify if they think a person is gay or not. And most people are very good at doing that. And it's higher than like probability would dictate. Like more often than not, they can accurately guess what a person's sexuality is just by a still photo, which is really crazy to think about.
Didn't symmetry used to be part of the study of that? Like I know it's a measure of attractiveness as well.
My face is really asymmetrical. It's really not okay.
Have you guys ever done one of those things where they take a picture and then they put your face like your right side and then your right side again,
no.
And they just flip it? You either look like an alien or like Fat Thor. Like it's nothing.
I look like two different people entirely because my face is asymmetrical. Also, I had to draw my face in an art class once. Not a great experience. You get to see every weird thing about your face. You're like, oh, your eyes should be at the same level. I'm like, mine aren't.
That's just being a teenage girl for what it's worth.
Drew is a teenage girl.
In many ways, yes.
So after no one eats their food.
Rachel gets a call from Paolo, if that's any indication of like what's going on in the show at this point. And then Monica's dad beeps in with the news, Nana's in the hospital. On that great cliffhanger, what's going to happen with Nana?
She dies twice.
Twice, thank you. Okay, well, commercial. Hey, Glenn, do you enjoy laughing and clapping your hands? This is the point in the ad where Glenn would make a joke, but Glenn is unable to record the ad this week because he is participating in a hot air balloon race. If you enjoy laughing and clapping your hands, I will point you towards A Love Bazaar, downtown Los Angeles' dedicated queer art space. It's real queer, guys. And on Thursday, July 11th, A Love Bazaar is hosting a night of comedy and fundraising. The space will be hosting 5 diverse comics, plus host and telenovela star Andrea Garcia, each doing sets about their culture, their lives, and living in this chaotic game of chutes and ladders that we call Los Angeles. So show up, laugh, and enjoy some Latinx-inspired cocktails by Bar Franca, in which A Love Bazaar is located. There is a door charge for this event, $5, and proceeds go to help actress and writer Geneva Zents shoot the pilot for Mas Latina, a scripted comedy series that's aiming to offer multicultural characters not often seen in media. And yes, that does include LGBTQ characters. A Love Bazaar and Bar Franca are located at 438 South Main Street in downtown Los Angeles. This event is Thursday, July 11th, from 7:30 to 10 p.m. If you're wondering what kind of art you can see at A Love Bazaar, why don't you go check out the store's Instagram page at A Love Bazaar Store. A Love Bazaar. Find yourself here.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Joey.
I'm Phoebe.
I'm not doing this.
Oh, come on.
No, this is a shameless, exploitive attempt to get people to watch our show.
Exactly. Friends, Thursday nights, right here on NBC.
Would you stop? They've got us in our underwear. We're never going to be in our underwear.
We're not going to be in our underwear, are we?
Friends, between Mad About You and Seinfeld, Thursdays this fall.
So this is the point in the show where I call out by name people who have donated $3 or more on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/gayestepisodeever, by the way. And have therefore earned the honor of being thanked in episode. This week, the outpouring of support has been beyond our wildest dreams. And I'd like to thank Mike Table, Flora Laptop. Popolis, Adolfa Zanziger, Thurman Doggarella. Okay, so no one actually donated this week. And I'm very happy for everyone that already has, but I'll point out that next week is our second season finale. And if you want to be in the very elite group of people who donated during the first days of our Patreon, you have one more episode to do it. So please go to patreon.com/gayestepisodeever and toss us a buck or two. We'll literally happy to accept whatever you can offer. But it does take $3 or more per month to get thanked on air. This money goes to paying the bills and therefore getting us to do season 3 of Gayest Episode Ever sooner rather than later. And also getting us closer to doing our second Patreon exclusive podcast, which will either be gay or TV related or both. So yeah, we'd be very appreciative for your support. Normally, Glenn would say something here, but he's not, so I'll just sit here silently. So we are back talking about Nana, and to a greater extent.
She's dead.
She's dead.
Or is she?
Well, it happens. The Gellers arrive at the hospital, and it's Elliot Gould and Christina Pickles who play Mr. and Mrs. Geller, and some other woman that we never see again. Aunt.
It's her sister.
Lillian. This is her only appearance. And I was like, am I supposed to know who this is? No, never seen her before or since. Played by Eleanor Donahue, who was the oldest child and father knows best.
Oh.
Yeah. Christina Pickles, it is worth pointing out, has a previous connection with Courtney Cox. They were both in the He-Man movie, Masters of the Universe.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Loved Masters of the Universe. No, I currently still can say that I love Masters of the Universe.
You're actually the first woman I've known to really like that movie, because most of the people I know who really like Masters of the Universe are people who grew up to be gay nerds, because it speaks to gay, because it's very homoerotic.
Oh my God, so homoerotic.
It's also just a DC Fourth World movie.
Yes, yeah. It's not a good...
Yeah, Skeletor's dark side. They have boom tubes.
I sort of viewed it as like a bootleg Back to the Future, like that kind of science fiction-y, like, and it also had the principal from Back to the Future in it as the like cop, the bald guy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Whose name I don't know.
Geoffrey Jones?
No.
I just told you I don't know
his
name.
That's Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I loved it.
I like that Christina Pickles played Sorceress and does a decent job. And now she's playing like Monica's like pesky mom.
I think she's great as Monica's pesky mom.
She is great as Monica's mom. And I'm glad that the elder Gellers got so much screen time over this series. They got a lot, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So this is worth talking about. Do they ever make explicit references to the fact that Monica and Ross are Jewish?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a whole episode about dreidels and the Maccabees.
There's also the Christmas armadillo.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to do Santa.
That does ring a bell. Okay. And then Rachel's also Jewish, correct?
No.
Rachel Green is not Jewish?
Is she?
I don't. Well, oh, I guess. She was engaged to
the dentist.
Green's Barry. Name? Yeah, Barry.
Yeah.
There are like allusions to it. It's never said outright, I don't think.
So that would probably be an example then of what Emily Nussbaum was talking about. Because if I said, I'm bringing my friend Rachel Green to the party, I think most people would assume that like this is my like Jewish friend, right? No? Am I just imagining that?
Okay. Emily and I are giving each other looks about we're concerned about you.
I thought Rachel was also Jewish. I don't know why. Hello. This is Drew interrupting to clarify whether beloved TV sweetheart Rachel Green is Jewish or not. It is, in fact, never explicitly stated on the show, but nonetheless implied that she is. A 2014 Vulture article by Lindsay Weber, which I will link to in the show notes, cites the fact that Rachel is from Long Island, was engaged to Barry Farber, DDS, and calls her grandmother Bubby as examples of this. Also, in case you're wondering, Weber also mentions Rachel's nose job. Friends co-creator Marta Kaufman said in 2011 in an interview with the Jewish Telegraph that Rachel is actually the only Jewish friend because Ross and Monica have a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, whereas Rachel's mother apparently is Jewish. But it might just be Kaufman's word of God that makes this so. Rachel's mom, by the way, is played by Marlo Thomas, daughter of isn't Danny Thomas one? Danny Thomas, though we are not to infer that Rachel is Lebanese. Listen to episode 3 if that joke doesn't make sense. They're reminiscing about Nana's various habits, and this is where they establish that she used to steal Sweet and Low packets. The nurse comes and says it's time, and Monica and Ross give their final goodbyes to Nana. And when Ross finally does it, it did get a reaction out of me, even though it's in the title. I knew it was going to happen, but Nana springs back to life briefly and then dies again. That's what happens.
For really no purpose. Like, it's not really talked about after this, really, in the episode at all, other than like it's a joke to the titular friends in the next scene. But
the nurse also says this almost never happens, which actually kind of made me laugh. But yeah, it's like I was wondering if any of you guys had any sort of like reach around explanation for
Emily does.
I mean, I feel like Ross had some very reach aroundy things here in relation to the gay subplot.
Mm-hmm.
Like Monica has no problem showing physical affection for her relative.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ross, a man, tries to, and it's a literal like jump scare.
Oh, that's true.
Moment. I like that.
Okay.
And that was my deep read on it.
And what happened to him? Because he's the most emotionally closed off of any of the friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I'm good with that. And they go out and say like, Nana died. And they're like, we know. And they're like, no, it happened again. And then we're back in Central Park, and Chandler is still fucking talking about the gay thing. And he's like, is it my hair?
I have to know, okay? Is it my hair?
Yes, Chandler, that's exactly what it is. It's your hair.
Yeah, you have homosexual hair.
And
it's a little bit his hair.
I know. One of the girls says, like, you have homosexual hair. He kind of does, though. That's like a weird joke. Like, only Hugh Grant can be heterosexual and have that, like, wavy, floppy hair. It's too perfect. It's like pretty boy
it's
hair.
It's very nice.
Yes, it's very nice. That's not something my hair when I had hair would ever do.
When I said it gave me a complex, it gave me a complex.
Which made it all the more frustrating that they cut it so short the next season, and also Joey as well. And I just don't know what the idea was that, like, none of the guys can have a lot of hair anymore.
I mean, the girls, I mean, they have this voluminous hair. You know, Rachel had the Rachel that was super famous. And then over the season, they also, like, brutalize it and make it super straight and stuck to their faces. It's not cute anymore. So I think that maybe they just took the hair in a different direction on this show.
Did Phoebe ever get an iconic haircut over the course of the show?
No.
No.
Poor Phoebe. She deserved it.
What?
She had great hair.
Yeah.
She had great hair. But, like, so I think there's the Rachel do, and then Monica gets that bad haircut from Phoebe. That's, like, the Dudley Moore haircut.
Mm-hmm. She also gets dreads. Not dread, but like,
Uh-huh.
Why? Wherein?
When they go on to the vacation. Caribbean, yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. Does it look good?
No.
Oh, it looks really bad.
Okay. So Chandler is very upset by the idea that this coworker has thought that he's gay. Is there any argument other than, like, internalized homophobia for why a straight person would be upset at being mistaken for gay?
I can't even tell if he's upset. I think he more just wants to know the why of it. And it could be that he wants to course correct, but mm-hmm. I think he's just like, why does everybody think this about me?
I feel like he doesn't like it. Otherwise, he would just let it go.
Like, if it would be a story.
Well, and it's also Chandler, who, if you're a fan of the show, you know, is just kind of anxious about everything.
Yes.
And also, given what we find out about his mother, second mother,
mm-hmm.
like, he's going to have issues around homosexuality and homosexuality adjacent issues.
When you say that someone has issues with homosexuality, isn't that a polite way of saying that they're kind of homophobic?
Sometimes, but I don't...
Like, if I said this person has issues with, like, a certain race of people, you'd be like, your friend's fucking racist.
No, he has issues with his perceived homosexuality. Like, I think if... I don't know. Like, it's not like he... And again, I'm not defending homophobes. Like, when people say, oh, I don't have a problem with other people being gay, I'm just not gay.
Mm-hmm.
But given... And I know, where do we land? And his mom is trans, right?
Let's just refer to his mother as Kathleen Turner, because that's the easiest way to make it clear who we're talking about.
So, I mean, growing up with Kathleen Turner, he... And again, it's the 90s. Like, psychology and science were muddled and gross, and it was just part of the conversation. And again, I'm not defending people who are homophobic,
yes,
but I'm giving Chandler a little bit of a pass to just, like, not fixate on it, but just, like, ask around, being like, is there something I'm missing? Because Kathleen Turner was married to Chandler's mother, and it wasn't until later in life that Kathleen Turner
became Kathleen Turner.
Yeah, yes. Became Kathleen Turner and made this decision. And if Chandler wants to approach it from an abundance of caution, if that may be his relationship with Kathleen Turner repressed certain things
mm-hmm.
in him that are now, like, red flags to everyone else. Well, not red flags, but, like...
Right, or at least...
A roadmap of sorts. Like, if he is just conscious of his own reluctance, and this is, again, me being very generous to him, because that's not even part of his biography yet. I don't know. I didn't read the Bible. Maybe it was.
I don't think they knew this about him. And the best argument I can think of is that being perceived as being gay is a giant cock block. So that would be why he's anxious about it. But, like, I basically read it as being homophobic.
I mean, that is the joke that they made earlier. Yeah.
And later, too.
Yeah, again, it comes up.
So they interviewed David Crane in the Chicago Tribune in 2016 when there was another round of people complaining about friends being homophobic. And Crane, who again is gay, strongly rejects the implication that Chandler was homophobic. And the quote is, he has his own anxieties and issues, but I don't think the character was homophobic in the least. Which I'm like, I don't, in the least is, like, kind of hard to do when he always has such a big Daffy Duck reaction to being seen as being gay.
I mean, I read that as, you know, a gay person thinking they can't ever be homophobic. That's how I read his statement, but,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And we are often homophobic.
Yeah.
Not this podcast in particular, just as we as gay people.
As a people.
Mm-hmm. Our community is notorious mm-hmm. yeah. for infighting.
They discuss Nana's two deaths. Phoebe goes all Shirley the Loon.
No, I mean, maybe no one ever really goes, you know? Ever since my mom died, every now and then I get this feeling that she's, like, right here, you know? Oh, Oh, and Debbie, my best friend from junior high, got struck by lightning on a miniature golf course. I always get this really strong Debbie vibe whenever I use one of those little yellow pencils, you know. I miss her.
Aw, here, Phoebs. Want this?
Oh, thanks.
Sure. I just sharpened her this morning.
Now, see, I don't believe any of that. I think when you're dead, you're dead. You're gone. You're worm food. So Chandler looks gay, huh?
And I don't know who this is, but it's not Debbie.
She's wearing like a weird white vest that has like black line drawings on it. One of like a caterpillar.
I was looking at that the entire scene.
Right.
It's distracting.
I was actually listening to Keep It, and they were talking to Whitney Cummings, who's worked on a lot of different shows. And she says that if you watch Friends, Phoebe's the only one who dresses like the 90s. Everyone else is like a lot more basic because they dress those characters to be in syndication and not look dated a few years in the future and also go overseas and work overseas. So everything has to be like fairly standardized. But like Phoebe's the exception because she's supposed to be a kook. So she's just wearing like Tara from Buffy on her worst day would have not have worn that weird outfit. It's very, very strange.
It looks like she just ran through Blossom's closet and came out the other end.
So they were still trying to figure out how Phoebe dresses at this point.
I mean, the clothes fit, which is more than Blossom could say.
True.
It's a burn on Blossom.
I love Blossom. I'm just letting you know that I noticed that her vest fit her well.
Right. What is Joey? Joey compares dead Nana to worm food, and everyone makes a bad face, and then he throws Chandler under the bus, being like, so Chandler looks gay, huh? Yeah. Yeah.
Did you not enjoy this episode, Drew?
I don't really enjoy watching Friends. I don't think it's that funny. It's like Phoebe makes me laugh sometimes, and Joey makes me laugh sometimes, but the rest of them...
Did you watch the Joey spinoff?
No.
I
watched it.
Oh, I did not.
They really burned Pepperdine a lot.
Why?
I don't know.
I mean, I know why, but like someone on the staff must have just hated that school.
Probably.
Yeah. There's two scenes, and then the next major scene is that Chandler is in the office and he runs into Shelley again.
Hey, gorgeous.
Hey. Look, I'm sorry about yesterday.
No, don't worry about it. Believe me. Apparently other people have made the same mistake.
So. Oh, okay. Phew.
So, what do you think it is about?
I don't know. You just have a quality.
Right, great.
You know, it's a shame because you and Lowell would have made a great couple.
Lowell? Financial services, Lowell? That's who you saw me with?
What? He's cute.
Well, yeah. There's no Brian in payroll.
Is Brian?
No. I don't know. Point is that if you were going to set me up with someone, I'd like to think you would set me up with somebody like him.
Well, I think Brian's a little out of your league.
Excuse me. You don't think I could get a Brian?
It is interesting that they're like saying this character can determine who is handsome and who is not, even though he doesn't want to admit that that's anywhere close to his personality.
Well, I also feel like that is a weird change. Not weird, but there's a change between the 90s and 2000s and beyond is that like for a very long time, like men weren't allowed to comment on the attractiveness of other men, and they weren't allowed to acknowledge when another man was good looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget which show it is, but someone even says like on the subject, like, you know, just acknowledging another man is attractive doesn't make you gay. And the straight male character said, well, it doesn't help. And that got a laugh. I probably laughed.
Is that Seinfeld?
Oh, I think it is Seinfeld.
That sounds like something George says.
Yeah, it's probably from the episode we talked about.
It might be. No. That was a year ago.
Yeah, it is from Seinfeld. Thank you. And so, I think now that male attractiveness is more part of our culture and men are valued for their looks more explicitly, praise be, that is now just a common thing, like where men can acknowledge when other men are attractive.
So it's like progressive that Chandler was doing this, but they're playing it for a laugh.
They're playing it for a laugh. It's not progressive. But.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the joke. And then I set it up for the joke at the very end. But also he is slowly realizing these things about himself. And then is it the next scene when they're about to leave for the funeral?
what he says, the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can say that right now because they're about it. Like it transitions to like the final chunk of the episode. But like very quickly, everyone's getting dressed up to go to Nana's funeral. And Joey and Chandler are the last two to enter. And he says, don't we look all nice dressed up or whatever? I'll cut it in. And he's like, oh, it's stuff like this, isn't it? And they're just kind of like, yeah, you.
Well, you know, what's funny is if you want to talk about Chandler and Joey, generally speaking, in the series, they have always had a very loving, affectionate, complimentary relationship.
Yes.
And that wasn't standard. Like, it's very physical.
Right.
And I mean, they haven't really established that yet in the timeline. But I just find that as an interesting point when we're talking about this show. Yeah. Because that was straight males, you know.
But there were also plenty of, like, jokes at that expense, like when they talk about sharing soap in the shower, and Joey asks Chandler to think about the last place that Joey washes and the first thing that Chandler washes. So going from ass to face.
But again, Joey doesn't mind that. Chandler does, but that's because Chandler's neurotic.
What's Chandler's face?
It's also Chandler's face. It's not going from...
Yeah.
If it was going from Chandler's ass to Joey's face, Joey might have another opinion.
I mean, Joey wouldn't, but
like, they're not always going to take showers in the same order, so that really doesn't like work perfectly, but okay.
And I also don't believe that Joey would take the shower first. Like, he sleeps in and Chandler has a job.
That makes sense. In the third season is when Joey moves out and Chandler's sad because he loses his friend. And that is what made people think that the show was gearing towards making Chandler gay, making Chandler realize he was in love with Joey and that he's gay. Because it does kind of play like a breakup because he misses his friend very, very badly. And you're allowed to miss friends you're not in relationships with. Like, that's a real thing. But it's just not something you ever really would see on a TV. So I think people were confused about that. And the creators actually had to say, no, that's not what's happening. Don't worry. And
Don't worry. Did they actually say don't worry?
Kind of. I couldn't find that actual statement, but I did find something I actually remember reading back in the day in People magazine. It was like Cheers and Jeers, but like whatever the People version of that is. And this woman, Elaine Showalter, has this thing that begins the opening sentences. I guess we're not going to see the Friends episode called The One Where Chandler Comes Out. And she writes about how it seemed like it was going to happen and they said it's not going to happen. And her final paragraph is actually very good. She says, viewers today rightly resist cliches about sexual identity, but we're also more willing, if friends would dare us, to accept the notion that even our comedic favorites can make discoveries about themselves. Gay characters have come a long way on primetime, but producers seem unwilling to make them lead characters. It's time to grow up. If Chandler got a life to match his hair, I'd still be there for him. I'm like, oh, that's actually very nicely put.
Was this 1996?
1996.
It's People magazine?
People magazine, and Ellen came out a year later.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, like, the thing is, like, Chandler coming out would have been a more natural, better character and story decision than him falling in love with Monica and getting married.
What is the lead up to that? They, like, get drunk and have sex with each other?
Yeah, at a wedding. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no lead up, which is why it was a big surprise. And they were surprised that the fans liked it so much they weren't going to have it last. And then, but the fans loved it. So, because that was a cliffhanger for the end of a season. So then they came back and kept it going.
People were probably just glad that the focus was taken off Ross and Rachel for 5 seconds.
You are not wrong.
Yeah. So I have a question about Rachel at this point. This is very early in the show, but the entire time Ross is like shitbagging Paulo and saying mean things about the fact that Rachel's seeing anyone that's not him, she has no idea that Ross is in love. How does she interpret all these fucking things he's saying the entire time? Like, is she just...
That he's just being like funny.
Yeah. Oh. Thinks he's goofy and adorable.
He's not funny.
Friend zoned.
Mm. There might be something gay about the next scene, which is Ross... literally stuck in a closet. Mm-hmm. What do you guys make of this?
So my reach around for this, unless Emily, you'd like to go first.
No, please go.
Is that, yes, he's in a closet, and yes, he discovers a secret stash of sugar, sweetness.
Oh.
And it's for a grandmother who did not die, like, peacefully. She came back to life, perhaps because she had unfinished business. I don't know, my reach around is that, like, if you keep your love in a closet, like, you'll regret it when you die.
I'm good at that. What do you have?
I mean, I didn't get that far. Oh. Just that he's in the closet and then there's all that sugar in there. But also, yeah, he's playing dress up with his dead grandma. Mm-hmm. He's helping. He's pretty fluent in what grandma should and shouldn't be wearing and what matches and what doesn't.
Like, when they ask for a different sort of shoe, he knows how to interpret that. I'm like, I'm not sure. Even I would know what, like...
I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
Well, they asked for a slimmer heel.
Does this mean, like, a less narrow heel?
No, it means a more narrow heel, a slimmer heel.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what words. I don't know how words work.
See, Hannah and I worked in fashion for a while. No, I just was like, slimmer heel, could that mean the strappiness of the heel? Because the 90s had very strappy
shoes. I did actually pay attention to the shoes that they rejected, and they did have a thicker heel. So I think that's what they meant when that's more of a day shoe. Whereas at night is when you could be dangerous and wear that thinner higher heel.
Your attention to detail here is impressive.
You're the copy editor. Come on.
I know, but it's also different when it's a show you've seen many times. And
I just thought of something weird. So this episode is about Chandler seeming gay, and it's about Nana dying, but she comes back and then she's really dead. But the next big gay episode is the lesbian wedding, which has the plot of a old woman's ghost who possesses Phoebe. That's a weird like through line of like old ladies not being quite dead enough and like gay themes that has not come up on any other show that I'm aware of. There's probably just two of them. That's probably not a
third one. I'll ask the internet.
Yeah.
I feel like I'll have to unpack that in my own time.
Are these the shoes?
Yes. Paolo sent them from Italy.
What, we don't have shoes here?
Morning. We ready to go?
Well, don't we look nice all dressed up? It's stuff like that, isn't it?
They go out to the cemetery, which is actual outside, outdoors, and there is a laugh track. I say this
ghost.
Because it's ghost laughing. Thank you.
They are in a cemetery.
And ghosts do exist on the show, according to Phoebe. We did the Will and Grace episode recently, and there's scenes filmed on the streets in New York, and there's no laugh track because, as Glenn points out, it's weird. There can't be a studio audience there. There can't be a studio audience here, and Friends is like, no, we got to keep it. It doesn't bother me that it's there. It feels kind of natural, actually.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that while I was watching it, so good on them.
Nothing much happens in this scene except Ross falls in an open grave.
Did anyone else find the lens shot that they did from like his POV in the grave up at the Friends really interesting? And I feel like Friends didn't usually do stuff like that.
That's a perspective.
No, they don't frame shots.
No.
Yeah.
I guess that was before they realized that that's not something they do. I don't know. They're not outside very often either.
Yeah.
There's that football game during the one Thanksgiving episode.
Isn't there the one where they're at the beach and someone has to pee on someone else?
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. Like, yeah, isn't that Joey pees on Chandler or the other way around? But yeah, isn't that like The Secret? Or am I thinking of another sitcom that did a pee thing?
I don't know.
It was the pee thing, but I'm pretty sure that Monica was the one who got peed on.
Oh, that's right.
And I just can't remember who did it. She got stung by a jellyfish and then somebody had to pee on her.
There's definitely a sitcom episode where a man gets peed on. I don't know.
You mean sitcom episode or like Red Tube video?
Why not both?
Is there a reach around for Ross falling in an open grave? Or is it just because if it's just for that one joke, that's not a very good joke.
Any hole in the storm. I don't know.
Well, it's to get him high on drugs later. And so then he can have the scene with Rachel and then also the line with Chandler.
Okay, that makes sense. So he gets hurt and then they're at the reception afterwards and Mrs. Geller gets him all doped up on painkillers and he doesn't know what the fuck's going on. He cock blocks Chandler, who's being hit on by this woman who is from Candyman. She's the one that's at the end. She's like the girlfriend of the guy who gets killed at the end of the movie. I recognize her. I looked her up.
Hi, I'm Andrea. I'm Dorothy's daughter.
Hi, I'm Chandler, and I have no idea who Dorothy is.
Hey, look who's
up.
Hey. How do you feel?
I feel great. I feel great.
Wow, those pills really worked, huh?
Yeah, not the first two, but the second two. I love you guys. You guys are the greatest. I love my sister. I love Phoebe.
Oh, all right.
Hey, Chandler.
Hey.
I love you, man. And listen, man, if you want to be gay, be gay. Doesn't matter to me.
You were right.
I mean, Chandler could also, in this instance, just say he's high on drugs, I'm not gay. Like, he could have corrected the record.
Well, as we learn a second later, her friend thought that he was gay, so I feel like it would have been a hard sell to come back from.
Fair.
She's like, you were right, and they walk away. Mm-hmm. I guess poor Chandler, he's fine.
I'm indifferent about that.
Yeah.
It's a funeral. You shouldn't be hitting on people at a funeral anyway.
The scene with Mrs. Geller and Monica's nice because she's been, like, negging her daughter the entire time, and it's nice that now you get perspective on maybe why she does that, I guess.
Grandmother would have hated this.
Well, sure. What with it being her funeral and all.
No, I'd be hearing about, why didn't I get the honey glazed ham? Or that I didn't spend enough on flowers. And if I spent more, she'd be saying, why are you wasting your money? I don't need flowers. I'm dead.
That sounds like Nana.
Do you know what it's like to grow up with someone who is critical of every single thing you say?
I can imagine.
I'm telling you, it's a wonder your mother turned out to be the positive, life-affirming person she is.
That is a wonder. So, tell me something, Mom. If you had to do it all over again, I mean, if she was here right now, would you tell her?
Tell her what?
How she drove you crazy, picking on every little detail, like your hair, for example.
I'm not sure I know what you're getting at.
Do you think things would have been better if you just told her the truth?
No. I think some things are better left unsaid. I think it's nicer when people just get along.
Huh.
More wine, dear.
Oh, I think so.
Those earrings look really lovely on you.
Thank you. They're yours.
Actually, they were Nana's.
I think their arc was my favorite one of the episode. Yes.
The acting was also really good.
Christina Pickles is really good. Also, Courtney Cox is really good. But mm-hmm. I know that. It's just nice that, like, there's something behind Christina Pickles. She, like, seems to... She seems like she actually cares about Monica.
Right.
They also left things unspoken where, you know, a lot of shows would spell it out. Like, at the end, she's not going to cop to the fact that she's been acting like her mother and criticizing her daughter so much. Mm-hmm. But then you see her pull away from a criticism that she wants to make. And you just see that. You don't hear it. And I really appreciated that.
That is more subtle. Like, they come to the conclusion without having to spell it out. And, yeah, that's nice that...
And also, like, she remains within character the entire time. Like, it's not like Monica's mom was all of a sudden not Monica's mom and showing sweetness. Like, it was a sweetness through the lens of how she knows how to act with her daughter and how she can still show affection without breaking the rules of their relationship. Do we want to try and tie the Monica and her mom storyline to any sort of gayness of just like parental approval for choices a parent might think are wrong?
The mom doesn't seem to approve of anything that Monica is doing, at least cosmetically, physically. And she finally realizes that that's not helping anything.
I mean, they do play it as a gender dynamic. And over the course of the show, too, it's exclusively with Monica, the daughter. Whereas, like, you know, the son can do no wrong. I don't know where that's going.
Yeah. Ross tries to confess his love to Rachel and she just completely brushes it off. So she's like willfully ignoring the fact that he's putting all this out there.
Well, in this moment, he is high and he has also just told other people how much he cares about them.
That's true.
I was curious, do we ever see Chandler watching the game with the other guys?
All those hairs look alike.
Because yeah. literally every man in the room has pooled around Joey, the, you know, uber masculine character in the course of this episode, for the purpose of this episode, around this football game that they're watching.
Because Joey has snuck a radio in his blazer and is listening to the game.
Yes.
Time. Yeah.
And they're all watching in the corner and it's a big thing. But you never see Chandler interact with that at all.
Does Chandler like sports?
I don't think he does.
Okay.
But I mean, they haven't established that in the show yet.
Right.
But I just found that interesting. It was something I noticed watching it. Because the dad character, all the other significant male characters you see watching the game.
If Chandler was over there, it wasn't obvious at the very least. And now they're back at Central Park. And at this point, it does seem sort of weird to me. It's like, I feel like maybe this is just UC Santa Barbara talking, but it's like they should be having beers instead of like coffee at night all the time. Seems like a lot of caffeine to take in late at night.
Well, I mean, they're neurotic, so.
Yeah.
I love coffee at night.
I do, but I feel like after a funeral, like, I would probably be drinking alcohol, but that's just me.
No, like, I feel like after a special occasion, like a funeral, like, is when you want to have coffee. Like, you're just sort of savoring the moment.
Yeah, they do it at weddings, too, like, after the cake and everything. It's, like, the post-meal.
I mean, coffee started as an after-dinner drink.
Mm-hmm. Did it really?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I don't know the origin of coffee, right, but I know that historically it has often been used as an after-meal beverage.
Because it helps with digestion.
So do digestives, which are alcohol. I'm not arguing. I'm saying.
So they're sitting at Central Perk.
Looking at photos. What do you guys make of what happens with the photos? Like, what do you guys make of that weird connection they make between Nana and Monica?
Who are those people?
Got me.
Oh, that's Nana right there in the middle.
Wow.
Yeah, let's see. Me and the gang at Java Joe's. Wow, Monica, you look just like your grandmother. How old was she there? 1939. Yeah, 24, 25. Yeah.
Huh. It's like a fun gang.
I mean, I don't have a gay reach around for it.
Okay.
Not with the Monica stuff, but I mean, like the Buffalo Bill joke with Ross and.
That's how it ends, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But they make the point of like they find this picture of Nana at Java Joe's and with her friends back in the day, and she's the same age that Monica is now, and that's nice, but I don't know.
I feel like a lot of the Nana sentimentality stuff in this episode didn't feel like it was serving anything for the show. It was sweet, mm-hmm, and you know, really kind of lets you linger in it, but mm-hmm, I couldn't understand really the purpose.
You have close friends in your 30s and then you die alone.
Yeah.
Or 20s. You have close friends in your 20s and then they die alone.
Yeah, they're mid-20s at that point.
I wonder if it was just part of trying to figure out who they were as a show. You know, like, do we want to be the sentimental ones? Like, make you think about your place in the universe in addition to being funny and cute and accessible. But yeah, it just kind of floundered for me.
They kind of do. It made me realize that this show was a more sentimental show than I remember, because I kind of just remember the goofy parts. But like they do have like the shot of all the sweet and low packets falling down on Ross while he's stuck in grandma's closet is sweet and kind of a neat shot, even if the physics of what's going on does not really make sense.
Nope.
But a big difference between the show and Seinfeld is that Seinfeld never did shit like this, and the show kind of does it often. And it's not entirely unwarranted. Like I feel like a lot of times they actually earn the sentimentality.
Well, also like just being anything that's in the 90s about New York, I think is drawing on like the independent and short film culture and trying to make all these sweet, endearing moments,
mm-hmm,
and thinking that's edgy.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Also interesting that when I think about like the modern version of this, which is kind of New Girl, that New Girl is even more heavily borrowing from like an indie film like aesthetic. Like it's shot more like an indie film than it is shot like a sitcom.
Well, it's a single camera show.
I know, but the effect of it is that it doesn't look like a traditional sitcom at all. It looks like more like what you'd see in an independent film.
All right.
Yeah. Anything? Oh, so yeah.
There's more scene with the gay.
No, there's Buffalo Bill.
Ooh, look. I got Monica naked.
No, that would be me again. I'm just trying something.
Why would you take a picture of that?
Because naked kids are what parents take pictures of.
Parents would find that hilarious, yeah, if their kid was trying something out.
Tucked his peen, yeah, and like walked around?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I do not.
That did not rub me strange at all.
Nope. Oh. That read so true.
I don't have pictures of that.
It was the truest moment of this episode.
Okay, well, maybe it was a boring child. And then we have our final scene.
Yes.
Which is we meet Lowell and...
And Brian.
Hey, Lowell. Oh, hey, Chandler. So how's it going down there in financial services?
It's like Mardi Gras without the papier-mâché heads. How about you?
Good. Listen, I don't know what Shelley told you about me, but... I'm not.
I know. That's what I told her.
Really?
Yeah.
So, you can tell?
Pretty much. Most of the time. We have a kind of radar.
So you don't think I have a quality?
Speaking for my people, I'd have to say no. By the way, your friend Brian from payroll. He is.
He is?
Yep. And way out of your league.
Out of my league.
I could get a Brian. If I wanted to get a Brian, I could get a Brian. Hey, Brian.
And people's estimations are Chandler is correct that he could do better than Lowell.
I don't think so.
I mean, I understand that I am not the target demo here, but I thought Lowell was...
I thought he was cute.
Cute.
Lowell's cute, and he also seemed perfectly nice and funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And actually, intellectually on par. And I thought that the point of the scene was going to be like, oh, Chandler's just like this gay dude,
mm-hmm.
Which wasn't the point of the scene at all.
No.
Lowell needed a better suit, but it was the 90s, so mm-hmm. forgive him for that. But he was perfectly cute.
What Chandler's wearing in that scene is hideous.
It's a tie,
and it's like a really wide orange shirt that has like giant pockets on the breasts on both sides. And it's just like, whoa.
He has weird work clothes throughout the show. It's the ties.
Yeah, that's not good. So you normally don't think the gay characters are that cute. I didn't think it was that cute.
I also didn't think Brian was all that.
No, I didn't either.
I did think he was out of Chandler's league, though. I thought that was also correct.
I don't think he was out of Chandler's league. I thought he was like maybe upper tier of his league, and he also didn't know what he's into.
He sees Lowell and says like, oh yeah, you know what I'm not. He's like, I knew that you weren't. And he's like, this is when the radar comes up.
Get to laugh.
Because the idea of gaydar was not a widely known concept at that point. But like, people knew that gay people could spot other gay people, right? That's not new, is it?
I think that's perfectly established, because how else would we find gay people to sleep with?
How else have you thrived for centuries?
Trial and error. Trial and really unfortunate errors. I also like that he, like, Lowell says it like, he says most of the time we can tell. Sometimes there's surprises. And then he leaves and he's like, I could totally get a Brian. And then Brian's there. He's like, hi, Brian. And that's it. Brian, not credited.
Oh.
Yeah.
How are we going to find him?
I don't know. There's a few actors in this. Not everyone who is named actually gets, like, credited, which is weird. But and that's Friends. That's the first of at least 4 episodes of Friends that we will have to talk about in the near future. Not that near. We're about to end the season, but.
Emily, do you have any final thoughts about Friends?
Oh, sorry. That's right.
Final thoughts about Friends.
This episode, I guess.
I'm honestly concerned to do like a full rewatch. Because like I said, I haven't rewatched it in a while. I watched this episode to get caught up again for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a nitpicker. So I will probably pull from Emily Nussbaum's feedback and, you know, all the criticisms, and then feel super conflicted about this show that I loved for so long. This episode, it was fine. I feel like it has issues. Overall, I didn't walk away offended. It just felt like true to 1994.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That sounds like a good perspective. Glenn, do you have final thoughts?
Same thoughts. Like, I mean, I don't have the same fondness for Friends. I thought it was fine. I enjoyed watching it at the time. I enjoyed the characters more than the storylines, as I already said. And again, this episode was fine. But it's more interesting knowing the stuff we know about Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I divorced that knowledge from the episode, maybe it could have rubbed me like it rubbed you. Oh, I shouldn't say it like that. But here we are.
Why can't you say it like that? Don't internalize
that. This is
anything.
The 90s. So, Drew, how did it rub you?
I still don't. I want to have more of an opinion on how homophobic I think it actually is. So what I was thinking of is that we would do the lesbian wedding episode next season, and then I would do a rewatch of every episode leading up to it, just because that's doable. It's not even 2 seasons, I think. So I could actually find the time to do that. And I know that, like, at least the kind of not anti-lesbian humor. I don't know how to describe the attitude that Ross has towards Carol and Susan, but it's not positive. And
well, he was also hurt and betrayed.
I'm saying yes, but like it can be read as he had his feelings hurt, or it could be that he just really resents the fact that his wife is now in a relationship with this woman. It can be 2 things. Why shouldn't it be? And that's there right from the beginning. And in the first scene of Friends, we see them sitting around Central Perk, and he comes in and his heart is broken because Carol has finally moved out. And one of the first things Chandler says is, sometimes I wish I was a lesbian, which, again, is a very interesting statement when you think about what his family is and, like, what his whole dynamic's going to be. It's, like, one of the first things he ever does is, like, wish that he were a gay woman, which is very strange. I just kind of want to get a sense for, like, what it all adds up to and how it pays off in that lesbian wedding episode. And then I will stop watching Friends and just watch the gay ones from there on out. Yeah.
But season 8 is good.
Is it?
Yeah.
All of it?
What happens in season 8?
I don't know. I just felt like the jokes had a sweet spot. Maybe I just have a fondness for that episode where Ross, I forget what he finds out, that someone's, that maybe Rachel's pregnant. I don't know. But like Phoebe's like, that is brand new information. And it's the perfect delivery of that line.
I actually have some awareness of Lisa Kudrow speaking that line.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's the one where they find the sweater and they realize that Ross is the dad. And yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That is, yeah. That was a good season.
Thank you.
Does it have gay stuff?
No.
Emily, if people want to ask you questions about grammar or friends, where can they find you on Twitter?
My handle is Emily's a lot. I said Emily's a lot last time, which was my joke when I was 12. And now, as I explained to people as an adult, Emily's a lot, A, applies better, and B, makes a little more sense. It's EmelieSalot.
Right. Glenn, where can people find you on Twitter and other things?
On Twitter, I'm at I Write Wrongs. That is right with an R. So I-R-I-T-E, wrongs. And on Instagram, at Bros Courts.
No, it's right with a W.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I was like, I know your handle.
There's also an R there, but yeah.
Can you just do it? I'm very tired again. Drew, do it for me again.
You can find Glenn on Twitter at I Write Wrongs. That's right, R-I. Fuck, now you made me do it.
There's a W, everybody. Yeah. W, like right.
W-R-I-T-E, wrongs. And then Glenn is on Instagram at Bros Courts, B-R-O-S-Q-U-A-R-T-Z. Yes, that's a Stephen Universe reference. My name is Drew Mackey, and I am on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. You can find this podcast on Twitter at Gayest Episode, and we're also on Facebook. You can listen to all previous episodes of this show at gayestepisodeever.com or like on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you'd normally find a podcast. If you look for us somewhere where you would normally find a podcast and we're not there, tell me and I'll put us there because it's important that we're there. As we said earlier, we do have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/gayestepisodeever. Please give us money. That'll help us get around to doing a season 3 sooner rather than later. And all donations help us unlock the fun, cool bonus podcast we're going to do when we make enough money. This is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network. You can find out more about the Table Cakes shows at tablecakes.com. That is the end of the show. I don't have anything to say about Friends at this point. Are you guys good to go? Do you want to say bye?
Bye.
Bye forever.
Bye forever. Podcast over.
I got some troubles, but they won't last. I'm gonna lay right down here in the grass. Pretty soon all my troubles will pass, 'cause I'm in sugar town. I never had a dog that liked me some, never had a friend or wanted one. So I just lay back and laugh at the sun, 'cause I'm in sugar town.
A Table Cakes production.